From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, oh, get ready for this, is Vulcan, a distant yet to be observed dark star companion of our sun. And if so, what does it mean? Guest Dr. Barry Wormkessel with some theories. Some will astound you. A disappointing court ruling, or at least the way I look at it, a federal judge has ruled that reciting the Pledge of Allegiance in public schools was unconstitutional. U.S. District Judge Lawrence Carlton ruled that the pledge's reference to one nation under God violates school children's right to be free from coercive requirement to affirm God. The judge has granted legal standing to two families represented by an atheist who lost his previous battle before the U.S. Supreme Court. Carlton said he was bound by precedent of the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which in 2002 ruled in favor of Sacramento atheist Michael Newdow, that the pledge is unconstitutional when recited in public schools. Now, this ruling may only affect California, where this judge sits, at least for now. In Ohio, the children, polite and well-dressed, seemed ordinary enough to neighbors who hired some of them to help bale hay and saw them playing in a yard filled with toys. But the 11 children, all with conditions ranging from autism to fetal alcohol syndrome, were far from having a normal life, according to authorities. Their adoptive parents allegedly forced several of them to sleep in homemade cages about 3.5 feet high. Michael Gravelli, 56 years old, and Sharon have denied abusing or neglecting these children, who are ages 1 to 14. No charges have been filed yet. North Carolina area Hurricane Ophelia pounded the North Carolina coast Wednesday with high wind, heavy rain, punishing surf as the storm lumbered toward a Thursday morning landfall. This one is getting worse as we go forward, said the North Carolina governor. The Category 1 storm with a maximum sustained winds of 85 miles an hour could get stronger. In New Orleans, the husband and wife owners of a nursing home were charged with homicide because they did not evacuate 34 elderly patients who died after Hurricane Katrina, the first major criminal case related to the storm's still rising death toll. For Louisiana alone, the death surged toll by more than half Tuesday to 423. The officials fear the numbers could climb as floodwaters recede and more of the city becomes accessible to search teams, including deaths in four other states. Katrina's overall toll right now stands at 659. Well, you orthodontics have national conventions, lawyers do, computer salespeople do, broadcasters do. So why not exorcists? At the end of his weekly general audience, Pope Benedict greeted Italian exorcists who, he disclosed, are currently holding their national convention. The Pope encouraged them to carry on their important work in the service of the church. Problem was that until the Pope spoke, few people outside the inner circle knew that a convention of evil busters was going on, presumably in Rome. The Roman Catholic Church has been showing great interest in exorcisms in Italy. In 1999, the Vatican issued the first updated ritual for exorcism since 1614 and warned that the devil is still at work. The official Roman Catholic exorcism starts with prayers, a blessing, sprinkling of holy water, and the laying on hands on the possessed, and the making of the sign of the cross. It ends with an imperative formula in which the devil is ordered to leave the possessed. The formula begins, "I order you, Satan." It goes on to denounce Satan as the prince of the world, an enemy of human salvation. It ends, "Go back, Satan." Now, the Catholic Church is taking exorcisms very seriously. Back in Los Angeles, officials and union leaders have traded accusations over who is to blame now for the power outage that shut down elevators, traffic lights, ATMs across much of Los Angeles earlier this week. The Los Angeles Department of Water and Power said the outage, which affected approximately 2 million people, was caused when a utility crew incorrectly cut several control lines in the San Fernando Valley area. But union officials say the mistake occurred during peak daytime hours because the city was cutting corners and reluctant to pay higher wages. Officials denied the allegation, and one councilman questioned whether the mishap was done deliberately by employees to put pressure on the city during a contract dispute. And just look in the sky. The feature article, by the way, on coasttocoastam.com has to do with some incredible auroras, which you may be able to see. A coronal mass ejection is racing toward Earth, could spark a severe geomagnetic storm when it arrives, possibly tonight, maybe tomorrow. People everywhere should be alert for the auroras. They are pretty to look at, though. The CME was hurled into space on September 13th by an X1 class explosion at sunspot 798. This remarkable spot has produced 9 X flares since September 7th, including a record-setting X17 monster all by itself. Sunspot 798 has made September of this year the most active month on the sun since March of 1991. And an important seismic event, imperceptible to humans, has begun in the Pacific Northwest, as predicted, according to the government agency Geological Survey of Canada. The chance of a major earthquake, they say, is 30 times higher now for a roughly two-week period, but the odds are still remote. The event is called episodic tremor and slip. It involves a slow movement of the tectonic plates along the Cascadia margin of southern British Columbia. Faults associated with the plates have been the sites of major earthquakes akin to the colossal tsunami-causing quake of last December in Indonesia. Every 500 years or so, the geologic record shows this, and the last such tremor in the area struck on January 26 in the year 1700. We'll keep our eyes on that. And, of course, Stan Dale is keeping his eyes on all these possibilities. He'll be back with us in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Stan Dale has held above top secret security clearance and worked undercover for the FBI. He was part of an exclusive black project headed by Dr. Edward Teller, specializing in the development of flying saucer technology. Stan has lectured on many world events, which include the coming global economic collapse, developing solar-related crises in the Earth's climate, and the UFO deception and its real intent, suppression of badly needed technologies and high-voltage physics of cheaper energy. Recently, he's been on Coast to Coast with predictions of some possible seismic events, and he's our guest this hour. We'll take phone calls next half hour with Stan Dale. Stan, I expected to have you back, but not this soon, following your August 4th appearance, but thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
No problem, George. Good to be here.
This slow seismic slip that they're talking about, which is now underway in the Pacific Northwest, should we be concerned about this at all? They seem to be playing it down a little bit, even though they say the chance of a major quake now is 30 times higher. Is this a serious situation, this particular one?
Well, according to their statistics, it's, you know, not really. That's what they say. I wouldn't expect them to come out and say if it were going to be really bad right now. We're just starting that slip. It's got about another 6 to 15 days to run. However, based on the information that I imparted to you and your listeners around the 4th of August on the Mendocino Fault, which feeds right in just to the bottom end of the Juan de Fuca Plate, which is involved in this slip, it is not something to be taken lightly. And although it may or may not happen, I think I would advise your listeners and everyone who comes to our website to take advantage of the instructions that we share with you on how to prepare for such a thing in your neighborhood. Unlike the New Orleans hurricane situation, they had several days, whether they took advantage of it or not, it's another thing, but they had several days to warn the population and say, okay, it's coming. If I don't get some kind of a thermal seismic signal a couple days ahead of this one up, on the West Coast and it goes, it's going to happen at night, maybe during the day, but suddenly.
Yes.
And there's not going to be any warning. So people, after seeing what happened in New Orleans, should realize they have to personally be responsible for their own emergency preparation so that they aren't caught short.
Is this seismic slip, this possible seismic slip, is this a tsunami-making earthquake?
In that area, yes. I guess you noticed in the news today that the state of Washington, well, in particular Seattle, was practicing tsunami and earthquake drills and alerts over the NOAA emergency weather radio station there. This is not being done lightly. They are getting ready for it. That plate off their shoreline is such that when it goes, it will be a tsunami producer that will give them less than 30 minutes warning before it hits.
Go ahead.
If that happens during the nighttime, it could be disastrous.
Let's review a little bit from your August 4th appearance because you were beginning to see things. You have a very unusual map system. Talk a little bit about that, too.
Well, the maps that I put up are made from the naval data that I get every day at 3:30, well, 2:30 your time, California time, from the Monterey Fleet Numerical and Meteorological Observation Center, FNMOC, we call it. And they give us, among other things, the subtle variations in sea surface temperature all over the planet. And by using that data, I've been able, well, back in 1995, to start correlating very subtle changes in the rate at which these sea surface temperatures vary to predicting earthquakes underneath fault lines when they have sudden temperature changes on either side of the fault line where one side cools, one side heats up. So over the years, I've perfected the ways graphically to present the forecast that I get from this. And although, you know, if you're looking at how many circles I put up and say, here's a thermal seismic signature, there could be an earthquake of 5 or 6 here. If it doesn't occur, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't hurt my hit average because I know that those areas are under stress. Whether they release as an earthquake or not, it's another thing. But it tells people, look, it may rain today, you know, that kind of thing, but it's really earthquakes instead of rain. I say, you know, be advised there's a small earthquake or a big one headed your way, possibly. Take the proper precautions. And so I publish these maps on our website every day. I mean, this is all free information. And and Holly has presented a wonderful preparedness site there with heaps of free information for people. And she's gathered it from the Red Cross, from FEMA, from our own experience, and all kinds of advice from emergency responders about what people should need. And on that note, just as a side issue, we've had a number of phone calls and emails from people in the hurricane-stricken zone, one from a judge, one from a nurse, one from a lady that was trapped in her attic for a day and a half with her 3 dogs.
Oh, my God.
All of them in common had Holly's book, and they all followed the instructions. And the judge was able, his house was not hit, but his neighbors were all flattened. So he had emergency supplies not only for himself, but his neighbors. He had prepared, and so he helped his neighbors through the crisis. The woman, the day and a half in the attic with the dogs, survived. She said, I had my water and food for the doggies. I did what I was told.
And you don't need a lot, Stan, do you?
No, you don't. I mean, to begin with, you can't carry 10 tons of food up in an attic or run off into the, you know, the safe zone with that. You've got to have, you know, a certain amount that you can carry in your car or on your back or whatever. Or if you're locked into your house like those people were there until help comes. But FEMA has been telling people, look, at the very least, have 3 days of water and food and emergency supplies and medicine with you and a radio to hear what's going on in case communication goes down because you won't be able to phone anybody.
Let me ask you about water, Stan. How long can you keep it bottled up before you have to get rid of it?
You never have to get rid of it. You never have to get rid of it. You just keep a little bit of dry chlorine or liquid Clorox without any perfumes or soap additives in it. And you can put a few drops per gallon in that. We tell you on the website how to do that. And, I mean, you can go out and take muddy water, for that matter, put it through a very cheap sediment filter, just pour it through, and get rid of all the mud and junk in it. Then put it through something like the big Berkey or the, you know, the black Berkey filters that you get from Berkey Water. And it, what they have is charcoal and silver stuff, and it kills or catches and kills a lot of the viruses, 99.9%. And you can then drink the water. And so if you put water away in your in your house, in bottles of some sort or your jugs, if you've kept them out of the light, in the dark, so they can't get enough sunlight to grow fungus or something in there, or you know, critters, then you probably don't have to worry about it. But periodically, what Holly and I do is we go through and, well, Holly does. She does all the grunt work here, I have to admit. But she goes through and she sterilizes the water or changes the water over and sterilizes it with Clorox so that we always have good water on hand.
Well, Go ahead. There's a lot going on here, Stan, that people do need to be prepared for. Just yesterday, I had a story about a bulge in Oregon that was beginning to develop from almost nowhere. They spotted it on satellite. I mean, to me, it sounds like this entire planet is beginning to rumble. Is this true?
I think so. If I don't know whether you've seen my alert today on my earthquake page, but there's something huge. It might even be bigger than the Mendocino pressure I told you about on the 4th. I didn't see this until today. When the forecast I put up today, I put up the 4 days before today, I put up each day's forecast all on the same map, so I can see the pattern of things I've been seeing, the stress for the last 5 days, and suddenly it leapt out at me. I was looking at something really big over the Indian Ocean, and you think, well, that's half a planet away. It doesn't bother California. But the problem is, and you can see on my map I've got there on the thing, I've got a kind of a backwards L outlining a huge potential fracture in the surface of the Earth, which will split the Australian-Indian tectonic plate in two.
Well, let's talk about that when we come back, Stan, because that is major. And we'll open up the phone lines. If you have a question of Stan Dale, those of you who live around the New Madrid Fault, West Coast, even on the East Coast these days. We'll be back in a moment. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, how would you like an After Dark newsletter devoted to psychics? An issue about psychics. Well, that's what you'll find in an upcoming After Dark newsletter edition. And you'll also get a free CD when you subscribe or renew. It's called Perfect Possession. It's Art's interview with the late Father Malachi Martin. It's the scary CD version. Call 1-888-727-5505. That's a toll-free number. Operators are there 24 hours a day. 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online at coasttocoastam.com. When we come right back, we'll take phone calls with our guest Stan Dale on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Stan Dale, our guest this hour. Your phone calls, jammed lines here, Stan. But let me ask you now about this alert for the entire Indian Ocean, which you say could affect more than just the Indian Ocean, right?
Yes. George, if I could, for just a minute, I want to paint you a picture of what I have on that warning today.
Okay, please.
Imagine that the Earth is a big ball of jello, round. If you thump it with your finger on one side, it will make rings of splash go around the jello ball all the way to the other side, where they will start getting smaller and smaller until they come to a point exactly opposite on the other side of the ball of jello from where you hit it with your finger. This is transferring energy around the planet and then regrouping it as another force, a little bit less than your finger thump, but almost as strong on the other side of the planet. Now, hold that picture in your mind. In the Indian Ocean, there is a weak spot in the crust that makes kind of a backwards L, running from near Bangladesh straight down into the middle of the Indian Ocean and taking a left turn and going into where three tectonic plates join. Now, that's a weak area already. But today, I saw a thermal signature on that so strong it outlined that weak fault line all the way down into the join of these three, where these other three plates gathered together in the Indian Ocean.
And when you say so strong as anything you've seen in the past?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's huge. It's a big signature. Now, the plates are the Antarctic plate, the African plate, and the Australian Indian plate. if this fractures, where we see the stress building up, huge stress, it will certainly produce tsunamis all through Indonesia and the west coast of Australia, all over the east coast of Africa, up into India, and even into the Persian Gulf. It is huge. If that releases now, it's going to make a splash in two ways. First of all, it's going to transmit shockwaves all along those plate edges around the Antarctic, into the underneath Australia and into the southern Pacific to another group of plates, the Nazca Plate, and it will join and come up toward California and toward the San Andreas Fault. The other thing is, like that jello ball I just told you about, it will make a huge thump that will thump the planet like a ball of jello, and circular splash rings will go out from that and reconverge over on the other side of the planet, and guess where? The Baja. Now, this is not good. If you shake the Baja, which has already had in the last 12 days several thousand small earthquakes.
It's ready to go right now.
And Mammoth volcano in the caldera there, that is also close enough to be triggered by this. So if we get a huge event in the Indian Ocean, within 24 hours, give or take about 4 hours, we're going to see that concentric splash hit the other side of the planet. And if it does trigger Southern California, there are huge forces there that can release. And what you said at the earlier part of the program about that news item you read the other day about that bulge in Oregon, they don't know whether that bulge down there is magma or water.
That's right. You're absolutely right.
And if you look at the before that, a couple months, there was a hot spot, I think it was in California, where things just started to burn. And they said the ground just got hot and spontaneously burned, and they couldn't understand why.
You couldn't even walk over it.
All right. Now, that tells you, in addition to the other things we've gotten about the magma movements under the Cascadia subduction zone, that tells you there's hot stuff moving under the West Coast. And you couple that with these little flurries of earthquakes. When I say little, I mean in odd places and lots of them in small numbers. These are not pressure releasing as much as they are precursors to a major release. And then you get all this information we got today in the news about everybody preparing for earthquakes along the West Coast and even in the New Madrid fault line in Tennessee and up there where that slip is occurring up near Vancouver. You know, the alarm bells kind of have to go off. Now, I'll do the best I can on my website with the data I've got to give people warning before this happens. But my method is not foolproof. And, you know, 3 out of 10 times, I might not see anything at all. I mean, a number of smaller quakes, I just never see at all because they don't put out a big enough signal.
Yeah, but you know what? I'll go with your odds any day of the week, Stan.
Well, thank you, George. I really hope I'm wrong about this one. But when I saw this on my report today on the map, I looked at it and I couldn't believe my eyes. There's just the last 5 days, there have been pressure buildups all along the Australian Indian plate from New Zealand all the way around to Sumatra.
Well, and then add this to the slow seismic slips that are underway that other geologists are seeing.
Yep.
I mean, you're right. Something's going on. Stan's website, by the way, is standeo.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Let's go to the phones now, as promised. International line, you're on the air. Where are you calling from?
It's Patrick calling from Vancouver, Canada.
Hi, Patrick. Go ahead.
Hi, George, Stan. I was just listening to your show, and you indicated that there's a slow seismic event happening just off the coast of Vancouver?
Yes, George read that, yes.
Yes, okay. Well, where we live, I'm sure you understand what the geographical layout here. We have a Vancouver Island that kind of protects us against the Pacific Ocean. Now, I was just curious, should us, where these plates are located, and we were to have some big geological earthquake or tsunami or plate splitting or whatever you want to call it, and a tsunami was activated, would the Vancouver Island act as a buffer to protect Vancouver City, or would we still be in actual range, I guess, if
well,
you want to call it
a
tsunami?
Well, let me put it this way. Okay. Vancouver Island is an island, and although the main wave may hit one side of it, it will go around and hit the coast and bounce back. And without doing a computer model of that, which is quite difficult for me anyway, I wouldn't be able to tell you whether the reflected waves will come back and hit you from the other side. But I certainly wouldn't take it for granted that because you've got an island that you don't need to prepare. Please prepare.
Thank you for your help.
Thank you, Patrick. Appreciate you being on the program. First-time caller line, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Where might you be?
George, first of all, I want to tell you that I love you very much, and I love your show.
Well, you're
welcome. I have little orange eyes. You have to forgive me. And I need to ask Stan, and I'll try to ask this quickly. Stan, my name is Jeannie. I live in the Tampa Bay, Florida, near the Gulf Coast, which is, you know what we've been through.
I do.
It's just incredible, and what just happened. I hope I can get this out. We just had a lot of thousands of people we took in from the New Orleans situation. Now, I know within my heart, I follow these things. I have gut feelings, and unfortunately, they're usually 99% accurate. Around the 23rd, we're going to have another big one here in Florida. Pray to God it's not another Katrina, and I do have prayer partners loyally that when I go into this mode, you know, they know it's real, and we pray. However, Sylvia Brown came on yesterday, and I didn't want to hear what I heard because of the way that I pray, but she stated that we are going to have a lot more hurricanes here in Florida, even into the fall. I mean, we are really getting worn out, and the thing I'm concerned about is the fact that we've taken in now thousands of people, nowhere to put them if we have a hurricane, from the disaster that just happened, the worst hurricane ever. And I want to know what you see, and I'll hang up when I listen to you. But I just don't think people can take many more hurricanes this year. It's just it's horrific. And I do live near the Gulf Coast area here, and I'm getting a gut feeling that's not good, Stan.
I understand, and I don't know whether you've heard of Dr. Gray here in Colorado, who accurately forecasts the number of hurricanes and the named storms we get. Early, you know, like months before they happen. But he has said that we're going to have one of the worst hurricane seasons that we've had in, you know, a long, long time, like with 20 storms. And so what you're telling me is in perfect agreement with the scientific analysis that he and his team do. So, yes, I think you can expect several more hurricanes, or if not hurricanes, severe storms. All along the Florida coast and up into the Carolinas, and possibly some more we get into the Gulf. I hope not. But in addition to that, there are little earthquakes occurring along the New Madrid fault line as well. The whole problem could be compounded by earthquake activity as well.
Stan, last week Sylvia Brown said look out for the Carolinas, and sure enough, here's Ophelia doing what she does. The hurricane season normally ends the end of October. Because of these global changes, is it possible that even that is not etched in stone?
Yes, that's quite possible. We're seeing some rather dynamic changes in the weather, almost like a climate change. It's not unexpected. A number of us have known and warned about this for years, that the global warming that's going on, we're not blaming that so much on human endeavor.
It's a cycle, isn't it?
It quite possibly could be. But the sun is the major villain, in our opinion. And we are warming up. And I don't think any amount of cutting, you know, combustible fuels and stuff at this point is going to reverse what is happening. But that tremendous amount of heat energy coming from the sun, and as evidenced today even by the flare impact, or the CME impact, we're getting more energy at a time when the sun should be quieter. It's approaching the downtime of its 11.8-year cycle. But as you said, there are cycles, these things. And the unknown part is at what cycle, whether it be a 500-year, 1,000-year, or 10,000-year cycle, at what cycle does the cycle break and something new and terrible happen? You know, like massive eruptions on the sun. I'm watching that. It's one of the major indicators for both quakes and storms. The sun is the major player here.
Well, and Stan, you may be absolutely right, because it is very, very ironic that the sun would be doing what it's doing, and these are incredible flares lately, and then the planet would react the same way. For both of these cosmic structures to be doing what they're doing, as big as what they're doing, to me, there's got to be some tie-in. And I think you're absolutely right there.
Well, you know what? With the earthquake situation balanced as precariously as I can see on my charts today, if we get a major strike from a coronal mass ejection from the sun, it actually hits our magnetic field and turns the Earth into an electric generator, more so than normal. And this can put torque on the planet. And so we actually feel the impact of that solar burst, that the proton storm coming from the sun. And that could trigger earthquakes. In fact, a number of studies say that, you know, CME impacts can be correlated, very closely to triggering earthquakes.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air, and where are you calling from?
Hello, Earl.
Yeah, hello.
Where are you calling from? Earl calling from
Montreal. Okay, Earl, go ahead.
Yeah, Montreal's an island. We have about 1.8 million people with about 15 bridges. And there was a city official talking a couple of weeks ago about, since Katrina, talking about preparation for Montreal, that we wouldn't be hit by a hurricane, obviously, because, you know, we're surrounded by land. Well, I mean, we're in inland. He mentioned that we're sitting on a major fault line. And he said there's 1.8 million people trying to get off 15 bridges. It would be virtually impossible, that we should just stay put. Now, I've got some water and supplies and stuff, just in case something does happen. But, I mean, we're on an island. I mean, what kind of preparation do you recommend? I guess is we're pretty well trapped, I would suspect, if all the bridges go.
Well, Earl, we do have specific items that you need to stock in your car, in your home, or where you're going to be, where you might be cut off from getting home for a period of time from such a disaster. Mm-hmm. Do you have access to the web?
Yeah, I'm on there right now.
Okay, if you go to our website, to standeo.com, you'll find a preparedness button on the left. If you push that, there's a heap of stuff in there. I want you to go through that and see what you can put in your car or at your office, and just put it in a locker or someplace out of the way. But the emergency supplies, and we tell you what you need. It will vary from person to person for medicines or other things they may need, but we do advise you on that. So I wouldn't panic. These things are approachable. I mean, we can get through these things if you prepare enough in advance.
Well, and that's the key. You got to prepare for all this, Steve.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with Stan Deo. Hi there. Hello. Going once.
Hello.
Hello. There. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Phil in the Bronx, New York.
Hello, Phil.
And there is a tectonic fault line underneath the Con Edison nuclear plant on the Hudson River. What's the chances of that going? Do you happen to know?
Well, I didn't know that it was tectonic. I do know there's a fault in that area.
Yeah, it's a fault line.
Well, a fault line, okay. Tectonic is more or less a huge one that borders between plates.
Uh-huh.
And fault lines can develop and become a tectonic line if it breaks the plate.
Uh-huh.
However, the problem with the New England states and New York, obviously, is that the fault lines have not all been accurately mapped by USGS or anybody else. We
uh-huh.
don't have complete data on that.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
I think it would take... Well, if the New Madrid went, I think that the shock waves, what I can see on the maps here, would shake your area. But it would require that fault line that Con is sitting on gets a real thump at a time when it's going to release anyway. It won't just spontaneously release, you know, just because an earthquake shakes it somewhere else, unless it's on the verge. And I couldn't tell you that without knowing the displacement date on it.
Yeah. I can't understand... A reliable major corporation like Con Edison building a nuclear plant on a fault line.
I can't either, and that's not the only one that's in a bad place. I can't understand it. I agree with you.
They're all over the place, Phil. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. A few more moments to go. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there. Hello. One more time. I give him three shots, Stan, and then after that, it's goodbye. Let's go to our wild card line. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Peggy from Seattle.
Hi, Peggy. Go ahead.
Peggy.
I just had a question. We've heard a lot of your guests discuss the possibility of a major quake off the coast. And we live in an inlet of Puget Sound, so I guess my question is twofold. One is, what kind of impact will it have inland? I mean, it will actually be centered off the coast, but... what kind of magnitude would you feel on land? And then also, you know, we live in an inlet of Puget Sound in a small town called Gig Harbor. can you have small tsunamis, you know, within the sound itself, or are we protected from that type of thing?
You can have, depending on the angle at which the wave hits the coast. Actually, I saw a study, which I just can't recall where it was now on the web, but which animated some hydrodynamic studies they did on a tidal wave hit or a tsunami hitting the Puget Sound area and how far inland and up into the tributaries and various little valleys and stuff it would go. And what I do remember from it is it went a lot further than I thought it would. And not only did one wave hit, but the wave receded and then it came back again. And they said for the next 8 hours you would have diminishing in height and energy, but you would have more waves reflecting back and forth. So when the first one went out, not to go back to your car or home because there would be another one coming. I guess they're saying, how long can you tread water in that area if you get out and away from the high ground? I tell you what, that's if you hear of an earthquake, say 7.5, 8 Richter anywhere offshore, say within 100, 200 miles of you, get to high ground somewhere.
Stan, we're out of time, but let's stay in touch.
We will,
George. You may be back sooner than later.
Yeah.
I'm George Norrie. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.